Well, the summer of 2022 was supposed to be the great return to the movie theaters as we saw for the first time in a couple years several blockbuster-style movies released, but really, many of the titles released were kind of less than great, and this summer blockbusters are actually going to be coming out now for you to watch at home, and so we're going to take a look at which one of these are winners and which ones aren't, which is going to bring us to the topic of why great filmmaking may be a thing of the past. I'm your host, Luke Clayton, and this is the Must Increase Podcast. Welcome to the Must Increase Podcast, and this is the home of Church Media HQ and Connection Culture. Our mission is to increase truth and inspire hope in the lives of your church, your business, your family, and beyond. As I mentioned, I am your host, Luke Clayton, and I want to thank you for joining me for this episode. So this entire episode is pretty much going to be a stuff we like or stuff I like and actually don't like, as we are going to be taking a look back at this past summer's movie. Now, some of these I've already reviewed a little bit more in depth, and so you can go back and look at previous episodes where I did that, but several of them I haven't. And so let's go ahead and dive in. The first one on the list here is The Bad Guys. This is from DreamWorks Animation. And in my opinion, this was actually the best animated film of the year. I mean, some elements of the story were, you know, a little bit predictable overall. It was a great movie, however. So I'd give it 4 stars, and I believe this is now streaming on Peacock. Let's move on to Doctor Strange in the Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. This, of course, is from Marvel. It's a follow-up to the original Doctor Strange film, which came out several years ago. And I did a more in-depth review on this one in an earlier episode, but honestly, this one is mediocre at best. It really feels a little bit more like a horror movie than maybe your, you know, conventional action and superhero comic book type movie. I definitely wouldn't be watching it with kids that are under the age of 13. It kind of earns that PG-13 rating there. And it is just another demonstration of how Marvel is really just not the same ever since the end of what would have been called Phase 3, which would have ended with Avengers Endgame. They just haven't had many great movies or now that they're doing series on Disney Plus. It's just not been great. And so I'm going to give this one actually 2 stars. It is streaming on Disney Plus, however, if you'd like to give it a shot. Another one, speaking of, well, it's not an animated film, but it's a kids film with that features some animation, and that is Sonic the Hedgehog 2 from Sega and Paramount. Now, this is a follow-up to the original Sonic the Hedgehog that came out a few years ago. Now, you know, here's my thing about, I've seen both of them at this point. My daughter thought Sonic was cute and whatever, and so, you know, we watched it. But it's okay, but it's not great. And there is, when it comes to the action side of things, it can be a little bit more maybe PG-13 in terms of like the amount of just CGI and kind of explosive stuff going on. But, you know, I wouldn't say it's too much for kids. And, you know, I'll give it, you know, for what it is, I'll give it 3 stars. And this one is also streaming on Paramount Plus. Now, the next one I'm going to touch on is Top Gun Maverick. Now, I've already mentioned this movie a couple of times on previous episodes. Did an entire episode, actually, not too long ago, dedicated to just talking about this movie. This, of course, is from Paramount. But I just have to say, this is the best film of the year, and I wouldn't be surprised if it winds up being the best film of the decade. In an industry that's become oversaturated by franchises and all of the cinematic universes, you know, the comic book style movies, like we were saying, this film, Top Gun Maverick, is truly an original story. Even though it's technically a sequel, it really has this sense of originality And it's just so well made and well done. In fact, I think it's so good. I think it's too good to actually win any significant awards, because when it comes to the Oscars and the Academy Awards and all those, they no longer are looking for truly good movies. They're looking for movies that check the boxes in terms of all of their requirements for their agenda and ideology and so forth. And so because of that, even though I would say that, hey, it probably fits some of that mold perhaps, Top Gun is not focused on all of that. It is focused on telling a good story and just being a really great movie. And so that's why I think it's truly too good to win any significant awards. And here's the truth. They do not make movies like this anymore, nor will they probably make anything like it again. From the character development, to the storylines, to the visuals and the cinematography, to the audio mix, the score, the soundtrack, Top Gun Maverick is what I would consider to be a masterclass and excellent storytelling and filmmaking. It is one of the best movies that I have ever seen. I saw it multiple times in the theater, and everyone that I saw it with, I took my sisters to see it, my dad to see it, my mom to see it. I mean, I went all these different occasions to go and to see it. Every time the people that I took to see it, they were blown away. So this movie gets 5 stars. If a 5 out of 5, let's just give it 6 out of 5 stars. It's amazing. You got to catch it in the theater if you can. We've said this before. It is just visually, and like I said, the audio, it is designed to be viewed on the big screen. You can watch it at home if you want, but I would say if you're going to watch it at home, make that your second viewing. See it for the first time in the theater if you can. It's not going to be there much longer. In fact, in my area, there are already limited showings. It's been out since May. And so, but if you can still catch it in the theater, you absolutely have to. And if you do want to watch it at home, it is available on demand now. So you can buy it on like iTunes Movies or Amazon Prime, I believe, places like that. And it is going to be streaming on the Paramount Plus streaming platform later this year. Well, the next one is Jurassic World Dominion, and this is from Universal Studios. And a few weeks ago, I believe I did say that I was going to do a full review on this movie, but I actually never got around to it because, well, it's just not worth the full review. So let's just consider this my official review. And the best way I can describe this film is that it's a complete mess. I enjoyed, of course, the original Jurassic Park, you know, released back in the 90s, and I even thought that the kind of reboot of the franchise with Jurassic World was pretty intriguing, and, you know, the movie before this, the follow-up to Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, I didn't feel it was nearly as good as Jurassic World or definitely Jurassic Park, but it did set up an interesting scenario, which the latest movie, Jurassic World Dominion, completely fails to capitalize on or truly even explore. So in the last one, the whole premise of that it sets up this next movie to be about is that the dinosaurs that were isolated on this island in Jurassic Park or Jurassic World, well, they now have made their way to the mainland of the United States. And at the end of the movie, the dinosaurs that are there, they all get released into the wild. And it's really dumb how that happens, but the fact that it happens is really interesting. And so that is kind of the setup for the next movie. Well, when it comes to Jurassic World Dominion, you think that that's what the movie's going to be about, is how is humanity learning how to integrate, if you will, with having these massive beasts, these dinosaurs, living among them. And sure, it touches on it, it alludes to it, but the direction they head with the story has nothing to do with it. And again, it completely fails to even follow that to any extent. Instead, they're chasing these all new storylines, that feel completely disconnected from the overall plot even of the trilogy. Because again, this has kind of been what it has been setting up for. It's called Jurassic World. And so again, at the end of Fallen Kingdom, when they all get out, it's like, oh, I get it now. the world is now Jurassic. I see what you did there. Well, no, like let's just not even necessarily consider that. And let's just, again, kind of chase these all new, you know, storylines that don't connect, really at all, or really do anything to make much of this original concept of the trilogy here. They also are seeking to simultaneously follow the central characters of the trilogy. So that's Chris Pratt's character and Bryce Dallas Howard and this other little girl that got thrown in there in the last movie. They're kind of tracing, of course, you're going to follow the main characters of the current trilogy, but then they're also trying to simultaneously reconnect with the characters of the original Jurassic Park. So Dr. Alan Grant and, I can never remember their names. Jeff Goldblum's character and that other girl. I should remember their names. I should have written them down, and I would remember them if I wasn't on the spot here. But it goes back to those original characters from the actual 1993 Jurassic Park. But then also, so it's bringing in the current characters, reuniting them with the old characters. And you know what? That should be it. Like, you're kind of already kind of, that's a lot of, that's like six main characters there. Well, no, that's not enough. They actually now want to also go ahead and introduce a few all new characters that really contribute little to no unique function to the overall storyline. Like, literally what these characters do, they either should have been just almost cameo appearances that perform their function and leave, or it's like, well, the function that they did serve could have been served by someone else. Again, it's almost like they're trying to make side characters, like I said, what should be cameo characters, into these main characters and develop them and make you connect with them and all this stuff. And so by the end of the movie, I literally found myself, I'm watching this in the theater, and I'm literally finding myself feeling claustrophobic because the screen, the frame, is just overcrowded with characters. I'm not kidding. There were moments where I thought, why are there so many characters in the frame right now? None of them die either, by the way, which there actually was a ample opportunity for a particular character to nobly sacrifice himself and provide a very, what I thought would have been satisfying and fulfilling conclusion to his character arc. And just when you think that's going to happen, it doesn't. And so the longer I think about this movie, the more I'm convinced that it's total crap, to be honest with you. It's only saving grace that keeps me from giving it a one star is Chris Pratt. Because I like Chris Pratt. He's a good dude. I like him as an actor. I like him as a person. And so for that reason, Chris Pratt alone, I'm going to give it that second star. But I really don't think you should waste your time. But if you decide you want to, it is currently streaming on Peacock. And they have like an extended edition that's streaming on Peacock. I wouldn't bother because I wouldn't want to have to sit and watch anything longer than what you have to when it comes to that movie. Well, let's move on to Lightyear from Pixar, of course. And we're going to be keeping in the theme of movies that just weren't great here. So let's talk about it. This is the supposed movie that Andy from the original Toy Story, you know, the kid who has all the toys, this is supposedly the movie that Andy saw that made him want a Buzz Lightyear action figure. Now, this movie got quite the buzz, and yes, pun totally intended there, when it was revealed that it would feature a kiss amongst a same-sex couple. And before that, it was announced that Chris Evans would actually voice the lead character of Buzz Lightyear rather than the original voice of Buzz Lightyear from the Toy Story movies, Tim Allen. And there's not a lot to prove this theory, but it is pretty believed by many, and it seems pretty obvious that Tim Allen was kind of given the axe because his values drift a little more to the right. But beyond the expected, you know, woke propaganda that, you know, Disney just seems to try to put in our faces constantly nowadays, the movie itself just isn't that great. The first act sets up a potentially interesting storyline, but the villain reveal in the final act, if I'm honest, is just stupid. The story overall requires entirely too much thought and comprehension for kids. I mean, it is a like they're dealing with time travel, and I mean, it's pretty deep. It's pretty deep stuff. It kind of feels a little bit like Interstellar, you know, which obviously is not a kid's movie at all because it's just way high level stuff. And so Pixar, what they usually do is they seek to tell a kid level story while incorporating some adult level elements of, you know, humor and things like that to kind of keep the whole family engaged. But in Lightyear, it kind of turns the formula on its head by seeking to make this adult caliber story more child friendly. And it just doesn't work. And here's the sad thing. Pixar has truly not made a great film since it released Soul back in 2020. Now, Soul was fantastic. It was a great movie. They released it at the end of 2020, direct to streaming. It was really good. Lightyear, unfortunately, continues the trend that really Pixar's done with their past two or three movies by just putting out another dud. I mean, Turning Red was not great. I think Luca was the one before that. I mean, it was okay, but it's just not great. So it's really sad to see because Pixar at one time was really cranking out some great stuff, some great family-friendly, kid-friendly films, and they just you know, haven't been meeting the mark recently. Now, that said, the animation is excellent, and of course it should be because it's Pixar. So for that reason, I am going to go ahead and give it that second star, but if it was based on storyline alone, it'd barely make the one-star level. Now, I didn't see this one in the theater, and I'm glad I didn't waste the trip, but because it did so horribly in theaters, Disney did push it out to their streaming platform pretty quickly, which is how I watched it with my daughter. And I did it that way on purpose because that way I was able to skip the content that I'd rather not have my five-year-old exposed to. And by the way, when it comes to the movie as a whole, my daughter, she was not impressed. I asked her what she thought about it, and she said, yeah, it was kind of boring. So if you want to bore yourself and your kids, well, you can check out Lightyear streaming now on Disney Plus. Well, let's talk about another animated movie that's a little bit better, and that's going to be Minions: The Rise of Gru. This is from Illumination Animations and Universal Studios. Now, look, it's not the best animated movie ever. No, of course not. But it is an enjoyable family film and a welcome animated hit compared to something like the flop that was Lightyear. It was fun. It's funny. And, you know, it really is completely harmless for kids. And it actually did really well at the theater. See, that's the thing. Disney wanted to blame. They wanted to go ahead and try to blame COVID, which why are we still talking about that? But they did. They tried to blame COVID for the reason Lightyear didn't do well. Well, then like 2-3 weeks later, when Minions hits the theaters, it does really well. One of the best animated successes in quite a while. And so all that to say, it's clearly obvious audiences loved it. And there's no obvious agenda or anything like that. It's just a fun kids movie. I give it 3 stars, and I believe it's going to be streaming on Peacock here in the next few days at time of recording this. So now let's move on to talk about another Marvel film, and that is going to be Thor: Love and Thunder. This is the 4th in the Thor series of movies, and it's it's probably the 6th or 7th movie where Thor appears when you count all the Avengers movies and things like that. It's not the best Thor, but it's not the worst. It's very good compared to Doctor Strange 2. So when we're talking about the Marvel movies that have come out in the past few months, Thor definitely takes the cake compared to Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. But again, that wouldn't be saying much. And if I'm honest, Thor: Love and Thunder, even though, again, it's not horrible, it just further illustrates that the MCU, that Marvel, is kind of losing its edge. I mean, I didn't feel like I wasted my time by going to see it, but I don't see any need to watch it again. I mean, it's your typical, and that's the thing about these movies now, these franchise comic book, Marvel superhero movies like Marvel, is they've got a kind of a formula, and they rarely try to mix it up. And when they do, they seem to take it too far. And anyway, so this just kind of follows the formula, if you will. It kind of looks like it's the same director as Thor Ragnarok, which is the best Thor movie. So it kind of seems like they were like, well, let's just make that, make it like that. And it just, again, it was okay. Just didn't work for me. And the best part of the movie is honestly Christian Bale, who plays the villain. He was really good. Christian Bale's just good in just about anything he does. He's a great actor. So for that reason, I'm gonna let his performance alone give it an extra star and give it 3 stars. And it is streaming now on Disney Plus. Let's talk about another animated movie. This is DC League of Super Pets. This is from Warner Brothers Animation, of course, DC. It's not awful, but the trailer kind of led me to expect more out of it. It has some funny moments, but honestly, on 2 or 3 occasions, I felt that their attempts at humor were a little too adult. In fact, way too adult for kids. It's definitely on the line. The story was okay, but a bit forgettable. I could try to recap some things about it, but there's not much I can honestly remember about it. And for some reason, they decided to pretty much just mirror image the exact same villain plot from The Bad Guys by DreamWorks there. I mean, literally, like, it has to do with hamsters or gerbils, or I can't remember, something like guinea pigs, something like that. But anyways, it was again, when it's all said and done, it's okay. I honestly was hoping it would be funnier because it has, they had Kevin Hart as one of the voices. And yes, his character had some funny moments. Dwayne Johnson's kind of the lead in that. And so I expected a little bit more humor. And again, it was funny, a little bit too adult funny in certain parts. But you know what? I don't know. I'll give it 3 stars. And I think this one is going to be streaming soon on HBO Max. Well, the final film I'm going to review, I've already reviewed in the past. And this one actually originally came out several months ago. And that's Spider-Man No Way Home. And what they did is they released an extended cut. This, of course, is from Sony and Marvel. It is a re-release of the December film. And it's got a little bit over 10 minutes, maybe 11 minutes of added footage. And most of this footage is pretty much just comical in nature. At this point, you should have seen the movie. And so I'm going to give the biggest spoiler of it. And that is that all 3 characters or actors who have ever portrayed Spider-Man are in the movie. So you've got Tobey Maguire, Tom Holland, and Andrew Garfield. They all show up and they actually make it work. And it's really good. And so as far as extra footage, there's a lot more banter between the 3 Spider-Mans and things like that. I did go to see the extended cut because really, honestly, the extra footage aside, I could do without it. But it's just truly a great movie, and it's a great movie to see in the theater. And so I would say again, that it's worth going to see. It's one of those movies, hey, if you didn't catch it in theater the first time, go see it. Now, I don't know. I don't think they kept this extended cut out there long, so maybe it's already gone from the theaters. I'm not sure. I would say that Spider-Man No Way Home was definitely the best movie of 2021. It's for sure the best Marvel movie released since Avengers Endgame. And now, unfortunately, the rights to Spider-Man are technically owned by Sony. Years ago, Marvel, before they got bought by Disney and they weren't doing so hot, they sold their movie rights out to these studios to make some cash, and they sold Spider-Man to Sony. And so it's owned by Sony. And so while they have, for these past 3 movies with Tom Holland, that Tom Holland, No Way Home, Homecoming trilogy, the end of No Way Home makes it very clear that the future of this partnership between these 2 studios is definitely uncertain, and it gives both studios a clean break should they ever decide to part ways. And so that even though it was an excellent movie with an excellent ending, it's very clear that that's what they were doing. They were basically setting it up because there was all this drama back after the second Spider-Man movie where, Disney and Marvel had a falling out, but then they reconciled and whatever. But this clearly says, you know what, now we can both walk away from the table. What we've done with this character would make that and make that make sense. And so the entire trilogy was really good. It would have been Homecoming, and of course this one, No Way Home, and then Far From Home. These were all really good. And No Way Home is just a really satisfying conclusion, not only to this trilogy, but to really the entire Spider-Man saga. And because if you remember anything about the Tobey Maguire movies and the Andrew Garfield movies, their movies there was another sequel intended with their line of movies, and it never happened. And so there were some elements about the characters kind of left in question. And this movie does a really good job of kind of just concluding all 3 of the the sagas there of the three different Spider-Man. And again, it sounds crazy, but it really did work. They made it work. They explained this multiverse concept. Again, I'm not going to give the whole movie away. Check it out. So of course, I give this one 5 stars for sure. And again, even though it's considered to be a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because it's technically a Sony property, no Spider-Man films stream on Disney Plus. So you'd actually have to subscribe to Stars. Who does that? But that's where it is. If you wanted to watch it through a subscription service, or of course you can purchase it on demand and watch it at home. If you do purchase the on-demand version, you're probably going to be getting the original cut. But again, you're not missing much. So that is the kind of recap, a rundown of all the not all of them, but many of the big movies that came out over the summer that I have seen. Wanted to share my thoughts, maybe help you watch some really good films, maybe help you avoid some not so good films that you shouldn't waste your time with. But this brings me to the topic of, is great filmmaking dying? And I think that's a really good question. And I think there's an argument that it is, because, well, as I've alluded to previously, there's too many sequels, franchise movies, reboots. And look, I enjoy some of this. Like the Marvel Cinematic Universe up until Avengers Endgame. I mean, really, honestly, I could say almost all the movies were good. Some of them were really great. Some of them were meh. Ever since, though, Avengers Endgame, it's starting with Marvel, we're starting to get a little fatigued with it, and we're starting to see that, well, when it comes to the matter of actually, you know, trying to continue these cinematic universes, which, by the way, is, I think, is a really cool concept, and kind of continue these franchises, you can't just keep relying on the same old stuff, and you can't just keep relying on your brand power. That's really, I believe, what Marvel and even Star Wars, which is also owned by Disney, these franchises have really just gotten guilty of just strictly relying on their brand power. Hey, because we say it's Marvel, because we say it's Star Wars, people are going to come. And not just to click on Disney, I think it happens on the other and with other studios too, like, for example, with Fast and Furious. The Fast and Furious franchise has just gotten so insanely ridiculous in terms of their movies and the quality thereof. And I think that, but they know they're just relying on the fact that it's a Fast and Furious movie, so people are going to watch it. And so I think that relying on that brand power and these franchises and just rebooting things and doing sequels and whatever, it's just kind of lazy. And really, this is obvious. But most creators are now just solely driven by money. And of course, studios have always been driven by money. But there was a time when great filmmakers were just consumed with telling good stories. And there's still a few of those out there, don't get me wrong. But I think most of the creators and producers nowadays and the studios are really driven by money. I mean, we're really in an era now where the director, see, how it's supposed to be is that the director of the film is the chief storyteller. They really are the ones kind of that really are making the ultimate decisions about what they shoot, what makes the cut in terms of editing, even having some rights to help, you know, rework the script and things like that. That's the job of the director. Well, what we've seen in the past probably decade or two is the studio start to just take more control. I mean, especially on the Lucasfilm side of things, again, with Star Wars, we have heard many reports of the directors that were brought in to maybe lead a film have a clash with the studio head, and because the studio head wants to change things, and then things fall apart. And that's really evident in the final product, to be honest with you, in a lot of these, again, franchise movies. And again, when it comes to these big studios, the vast majority of them, they've just pretty much become propagandist. I mean, they clearly have an ideology that they want to push, and they seem to be more concerned with, going back to what I said about the Oscars and Academy Awards, they seem to be more concerned with just checking those boxes of meeting those qualifications and lining up, if you will, with the ideology of the day than they are with just telling a good story. And that's, again, why I go back to Top Gun, of why it was so good. They didn't care about that stuff. They just told a good story. Same thing with Spider-Man No Way Home. There's no agenda. They're just telling a really great story. And really, we can be hard on the studios, but I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that audiences have really become spoiled. And I will, again, kind of confess and admit that I can be lumped right in there. We have gotten so used to excellent quality films. I mean, think about it just from a cinematography or CGI. Let's think about visual effects and CGI. We talk about Star Wars. You go back and watch the original Star Wars. You watch them nowadays, even after a little bit of remastering, the visual effects are awful. But for the day, they were incredible. not even going back as far as Star Wars, which is, you know, 40 years ago. You just go back to maybe a movie of 10 years ago and you look at the CGI, some of maybe the earlier Marvel stuff, and it's like, ugh, it's not good. But on that day, it blew our minds. So now we have gotten so accustomed to just having incredible CGI that we notice, even though those of us who aren't, you know, in the world of creating media and things like that, we can notice it. I mean, I was watching something the other night, another Disney Plus series, Star Wars Andor, which just came out, which I don't know. I don't know what to think about it yet because I'm not that far into it. But I did notice, though, in a quick moment, I was like, that there's something off about that CGI, about those special effects. And so all that to say, audiences have become really spoiled. In that, we've allowed a handful of these big studios to just monopolize the industry. It seems like, what can we do about that? And how do we prevent that? It's Disney, it's Universal, it's Paramount. Like, who else is there? Well, I'm glad you asked. We'll circle back to that in a minute. But first, before we get there, let's talk about why this matters. Maybe you're out there and you're like, I don't care, Luke. Why are you talking about all this stuff? I could care less. I don't watch movies. Maybe you're a bookworm, and that's great. Good for you. You know, maybe you don't sit around and watch a bunch of movies and TV. You don't hit the movie theater hardly at all, if ever. Hey, I hear you. But let me tell you why this matters. That's because society and our culture is connected by stories. And this is how God created us. If you think about from a Christian perspective, the Bible, what is the Bible? The Bible is a book of stories that really tells one long, beautiful, masterful story about one central character, Jesus Christ. And it is a beautiful literary piece when you look at it, you look at it from many angles, but especially from the angle of this is a story. God has made us to connect with stories. Humanity is inspired by stories. We find connection around stories. I mean, think about the last conversation, legitimate, significant conversation you had with somebody where you didn't tell just a little bit of a story. I mean, I think of the other day, I had like a 10-minute conversation with someone, but you know what? Within that conversation rather, there were probably two or three just little quick stories that we told, because that is how we connect with each other. How was your day? Well, hey, let me tell you about this. This is what happened. Hey, I've ever told you about my cousin who did this. This is how we connect. This is really what drives our conversation, is stories. And so we're connected by them, but we're also inspired by them. You see, as you read a good book or you watch a story unfold on a screen, and you can get inspiration from that. And again, this is how God designed us to be. And so when it comes to storytelling, there are other ways. You can sit in person and tell and share a story. Read it in a book again or something like that. But when it comes to storytelling, video is truly the most powerful medium of telling a story. And the truth is that it will be a long time, if ever, that it will be dethroned. There are so many things you can do by telling a story in a video that honestly you could not tell in any other way. Think about all the things that can affect the way a movie or a TV show moves you and gets you connected. You know, you've got the characters that you can see on the screen, and you've got the dialogue that you can hear, and you've got the soundtrack and the sound effects that you can hear. And think about this, you can cut back and forth. So you can have somebody, you know, here, you know, 100 miles away doing something, having a little piece of the storyline, and you can cut away back to another character, and you can do that instantaneously. You can't do this in any other format. You can't do these things in any other way. The power of video is just so effective when it comes to telling stories. So that's why this matters, because this isn't going away. It's going to be around probably forever. And we are always going to be connected by stories, and movies being a powerful medium of storytelling. This is something that matters to our culture and matters to our society. So what can we do? Well, obviously, there's a few practical things. You know, we can detox from the oversaturation. You know, it wouldn't hurt to cancel a few streaming services to determine that you're going to like reduce your time on YouTube and social media apps and your screens in general. You know, again, I enjoy this stuff, but there is too much. There is so much is too much. And so, I would say detox from the oversaturation of it, disconnect. Don't sit down and binge watch, you know, shows over and over and over again, or like I said, scroll infinitely on your Instagram and whatnot. Do the detox, but we also need to be holding the studios accountable. And here's the thing, don't go see movies that might be lacking quality. in terms of like storyline quality, or if they violate your conscience. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to call for a boycott necessarily, because there is something that can be done that's more effective than that, I think. But this going and seeing a movie again, and I'm guilty of it, just because of the brand power, because it's Marvel or because it's Pixar or because it's whatever. Just going to see it just because the brand power, even though you know it's probably not going to be that great, you've heard it's meh. Hey, you know what? You're telling those studios, I don't care. You can put out junk and I'm going to support it. And if there's something in it that violates your conscience, and everybody's conscience is going to vary on that, then don't go see it. Again, this is why I didn't take my daughter to see Pixar, or to see Lightyear rather, because I didn't want her exposed to content that I feel a five-year-old shouldn't be exposed to. And so we waited for it to come on streaming so I could skip those parts. And so that is something that you can do, is to, again, hold these studios accountable by only seeing what you want to see. And then again, going back to this idea of boycott, I'm not necessarily calling for a boycott, because I think there's a better way. And that's that we can do this. We can consume from and support the 10%. And here's what I mean by that. Around 90% of media and entertainment content is produced by just a handful of these mainstream conglomerates. So again, talking about the Warner Brothers, the Disney, the Universal, Paramount, these are kind of your big studios. And they are producing 90% of not just movies, but media and entertainment content, news, and all these things in general. So basically, if it's a big name streaming platform service or a popular news network, it's most likely owned by one of these mainstream companies. So what you can do is you can diversify your consumption habits beyond just the mainstream. For example, I love movies and good TV series. So I do. I get a lot of entertainment value from that 90%. However, I virtually get all of my news and things like that from the 10%. And the point here is to be conscious of the content that you consume. It's very easy to just kind of fall in this trap of blindly following and believing whatever the mainstream pushes. And by mainstream, I'm talking about both sides. Like, I'll just call out a few names here. I'm talking about CNN and Fox News. It's very easy to just kind of blindly follow whatever the guy on the screen tells you. But what you're going to find is that many of the creators in that 10%, they are more objective, and they tend to be proponents of things like free speech and independent thinking, which that is going to make you a more conscious consumer. And so what can we do about this? Is great filmmaking and entertainment in general, is it dying? I don't know. It's not what it used to be. And again, there's a lot of problems with it, but there is something that we can do. Like I said, we can hold the studio somewhat accountable. We can see what we want to see and what we want to support, but we can also consume and support that small 10%. We can be creative contributors in that way. And so I hope this helped you today about, you know, kind of reviewing what movies from the summer you should and shouldn't see. And then also, you know, just talking a little bit here about what we can do to maybe have a part in shaping the future of not just movies, but storytelling and how our society connects in that way. Hey, remember, text your questions to me. I want to see them and I would love to answer them on a future episode. So you can text those questions to 615-900-4461. That's 615-900-4461. I said it real slow there for those of you listening in double speed and beyond. And also, I hope that you will subscribe on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Hey, why don't you share this with somebody? Share it with some friends. If you're a pastor or a church leader listening out there, maybe share it with your church, because we're trying to help your people and all people do more with media, and that be more responsible, be those conscious consumers, and be a creative contributor in that way, and navigate this crazy media-driven society that we live in. Remember, you can connect with us anytime online at mustincrease.com, and I look forward to having you join us next time as we continue to increase truth and inspire hope in the lives of others right here on the Must Increase Podcast.